Preserves of Cook County.
Illinois faces some big challenges. Today, we're about to hear a truly honest analysis of the problems we face. Equally as important, you'll also hear an in-depth discussion of some practical solutions. This is your radio source for stories, the insight, and the answers you won't hear anywhere else. Not in the media and not coming from Springfield. You're listening to Illinois Rising, presented by the Illinois Policy Institute. Now, here's your host, AM 560's Dan Proft.
Dan Proft, thank you for joining us on this edition of Illinois Rising. My co-host this week is Cole Lauterbach. He is a reporter for the Illinois News Network. Cole, great to have you. Yeah, excellent. It's been an interesting week in Springfield, as it always is, and Chicago. Chicago Teachers Union, not shy about new taxes they have, new ideas they have for revenue. We saw a rally in Springfield on, Wednesday?
Wednesday, yeah.
That was all about revenue. You know, Rahner says cut back, we say fight back. That was the chant. Well, it's the same chant in Chicago. And the way the Chicago Teachers Union wants to fight back to, staving off bankruptcy for the city of Chicago, CPS is functionally bankrupt, junk rated. Is all kinds of new taxes, reinstatement of the head tax, the corporate head tax, raise personal property lease tax, impose taxes on Uber and Lyft, increase the Chicago hotel tax, and impose a commercial property tax assessment, raise the Chicago vehicle fuel tax, create new special service areas to spend on certain educational programs, which, of course, are taxpayer-funded, redirect the $1 billion that Tiny Dancer wants to give Melody Hobson and Mr. Lucas to put his toys over at McCormick Place East.
You may have to explain Tiny Dancer.
Well, that's the mayor of Chicago. Okay. I think I popularized that phrase now. And Karen Lewis has also suggested graduated state income tax, perhaps a city income tax, LaSalle Street financial tax, prior to that. And this all against the backdrop of Chicago being the third-ranked city in the world, major city in the world last year in terms of the exodus of millionaires behind only Paris and Rome. So it seems that Chicago ain't ready for reform any more than Springfield has been in the last 15 months.
No, I agree. And it's with there are all these suggestions, too. It's a wish list. This is a Christmas list. I mean, you have to look at how much of this would actually go through. And it's them just kind of yelling into the sky, trying to rage against the man.
Well, yeah. And there's a lot of former Chicago residents living in other states that are tired of being Santa Claus. For more perspective on this, we're now happy to be joined by Tanya Trish. She is the vice president and general counsel at the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. Tanya, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
So, Retail Merchants Association is the association you represent that you're employed by. And when you hear the proposals coming from the Chicago Teachers Union and other politicians about hotel taxes and rideshare taxes and even an expansion of the sales tax that has been proposed at the state level, how do you react? And how do your employer members react?
Well, I think that the suggestions by the Chicago Teachers Union are of major concern to the employers that we represent, and frankly should be of concern to anyone that is working or that is driving or that is generally doing business in the state, because the things that they have offered as revenue, additional revenue to close their budget gap, I think is going to hurt everyone. Specifically, they had some things that were of most concern to us, and that was bringing back the head tax in the city of Chicago, increasing the gas tax to 15 cents, and creating some sort of special service area, which is a special taxing area, which would increase property taxes, although the specified area has not been determined yet. Those are probably the three things that are of most concern to us.
And if those things came to pass, the impact on retailers in Chicago, what will we see?
Well, it's huge. I mean, I can kind of take them one by one. So the head tax, as you are probably familiar with, we had under the Daley administration for years, maybe 20 years, the head tax was in effect. And basically what that did was it it instituted a tax on an employer for every employee that they had over 50. So if you had more than 50 employees in the city of Chicago, you had to pay $4 for each employee to the city of Chicago just for having more employees than 50.
Punishing you for hiring people. That's interesting.
Absolutely, and really punishing you for growing your business. You know what I mean? So if you have less, if you have 50 or less, there was no tax at all. But if you were lucky enough to be able to grow and expand and employ more people, then you were punished for that with a tax. And there is not any other jurisdiction that I am aware of that does a similar thing just for having employees. That obviously under the Emanuel administration, we certainly have our issues with that administration, some of the things he's done, but this was one of the very critical positive things he did was when he came in, vowed to remove this tax, which he did over a period of years. So the thought that this would come back, and especially in the employment climate that we have now, I think that the latest numbers of the employment rate for 16 to 24-year-olds in the city of Chicago is abysmal. When you talk about African-American teens, 90% of them in the city of Chicago are unemployed. And so if you want to tax employment, that's going to have a severe negative effect on all of those people who are currently unemployed, especially on the south and west sides of the city, where they are having some major issues, really due to a number of factors. But one of them is the fact that many people are not working. So I don't know how that, at the end of the day, helps the CTU. When a number of the people that are, a number of the kids, the minors, the high schoolers that are out there looking for jobs and have nothing to do in the summers can't find jobs because of this financial issue with CTU.
Tanya, if this is all of this Christmas list that CTU wants to get, I mean, the expense tax and all of that, what does that do to the mentality of somebody that's looking to, say, invest in setting down roots in Chicago and joining the Retail Merchants Association?
Well, it's a completely, a complete disregard for really the mayor's attempt to attract business to the city, right? He's working very hard to get more manufacturers to come, to get more retail, and to get employers to really invest in the city and grow, especially on the south and the west sides where the growth is needed most. And if you're an employer, you know, whether you're an entrepreneur or whether you are operating in other states and are thinking about coming to the Chicagoland area, you're going to think twice because you're going to think, I'm going to get taxed more if I'm there versus if I go, some other place. City of Chicago is competing for businesses not only with other parts of the state, but with other cities in the country. And businesses are very mobile, especially the fact that they can go online. And so people need to be cognizant of that when they suggest things that will really make employers think twice about whether or not they want to build their businesses here or whether they want the growth to be in the city of Chicago versus somewhere else.
Do you think a lot of people don't quite get it because we have this Potemkin Village problem in Chicago? I mean, it's kind of a good news, bad news. Everybody sees the Mag Mile. People come in from the suburbs. They experience a very small portion of the city, just a few wards in terms of restaurants and bars and entertainment districts and theater and so forth. So the city's great. It's beautiful. We got planters in the middle of the road. Everything's great. You know, we got all these successful restaurants and retailers. And so what's the problem?
There's a lot of problems, and I think that if you're a resident of the city of Chicago, you know it all too well because so many of the people in the city of Chicago do not live in the Central Business District, do not live in River North. You know, they live in the neighborhoods, and they are seeing increasingly, especially for those folks who live on the borders, near the borders of the city of Chicago, those businesses hopping right across the border and leaving and having a hard time retaining businesses on the city side. And, you know, that doesn't happen for no reason. That's happening because of the number of increased regulations and taxes and just anti-business moves that have been happening in the city of Chicago really over the last couple of years that businesses are deciding that they're going to take their business elsewhere. And everyone suffers when that happens, especially the neighborhoods. And so what you're seeing is an increase increase in business in Central Business District and River North, and a decrease in business growth everywhere else in the city. And that cannot stand. That can't stand long term. And so when we think about you know, proposals such as what CTU is proposing to tax employers for simply having more than 50 employees, you have to say, you have to scratch your head and think, you know, what are they really thinking?
She is Tanya Trish, Vice President and General Counsel at the Illinois Retail Merchants Association. Tanya, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to Illinois Rising on AM 560. The Answer.
On my first patrol, my adrenaline was pumping.
Always on high alert. After a while, it takes a toll. I was counting the days till I came home to my family. Finally, a day arrived.
But then I realized things were different.
I had trouble focusing and relating to things the way I used to. I decided to reach out.
Once I started making connections, things began to turn around.
Find resources and support at maketheconnection.net.
How can you get from here to there? We've got the answer from the North State Steel Traffic Center.
I'm George Cotsarillos looking at your traffic on the Edens inbound. Okay, on the outbound side, Montrose to Lake Cook, take it to 21. Kennedy headed inbound, O'Hare to downtown, sitting at 34 from Montrose is 22. Express lanes 14. Outbound's 19 to Montrose, 35 to the airport. Eisenhower in, Thorndale to the circle, 42 from Mannheim, 27. Outbound's a bit better, 24 to Mannheim, 37 to Thorndale. Stevenson inbound, 355 to Lakeshore Drive, 42 from the Tri-State's 32. Outbound 29 to the Tri-State, 39 out to 355. Dan Ryan headed in, 95th to downtown, 19 clear. Outbound I-57, no delays. Outbound on 127th, there has been a crash report. Normal delays happening on Lakeshore Drive on the tollways. Tri-State northbound 95th to Ogden going to be slow due to an earlier crash. And on the Jane Addams eastbound from Roselle to Route 53, it's stop and go. Taking a look at your weather right now, it is 72 degrees sunny. Our next update's in 15 minutes on AM 560, The Answer.
Senate Bill 3267 would introduce electronic driver tracking and charge you per mile that you drive.
Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson.
They're so desperate for money. What's next? Are they going to tax the air we breathe?
This is government at its best, taking blood from your left arm to infuse it into your right arm and spilling half of it on the ground.
We are really broke.
Start your day with Chicago's Morning Answer. Weekday mornings starting at 5 on AM 560. The Answer.
There is nothing sadder than having to say goodbye to your home. And for too many families all across Illinois, that's exactly what's happened. Unfortunately, years of reckless state spending has led to massive debt, resulting in stagnant wages, high taxes, and fewer jobs. And record numbers have been forced to flee Illinois for opportunities elsewhere. But we can change that. If we all stand together and demand that the politicians end the wasteful spending, balance the budget, and restore fiscal sanity to Illinois, instead of saying goodbye, we can start saying welcome back home to Illinois. Demand common sense spending reforms. Visit IllinoisAction.org to sign the petition.
Think you're fat? You might just be bloated. Find out by calling now for a free trial of Nubiotics, the new breakthrough that flattens bloated bellies fast. For a free trial, call 1-800-992-3236. Strict limit of one per household.
I used to be plagued by pot belly and constant bloating. After taking Nubiotics, my belly flattened and continues to get flatter. My sense of bloating and discomfort is gone.
If you've got a big belly, you might not be fat. You might just be bloated. Nubiotics is scientifically formulated with natural ingredients to flatten bloated bellies fast by cleansing pounds of rotting food and toxic sludge from your body. It even combats periodic heartburn and acid reflux. If your belly flattening results are too dramatic, simply reduce use to every other day. Think you might be bloated? See how much flatter Nubiotics makes your belly. But hurry! Call now for details while we're still giving it away for free. 1-800-992-3236. That's 1-800-992-3236. 1-800-992-3236.
We now return to Illinois Rising, presented by the Illinois Policy Institute, the radio show discussing the honest truth about Illinois policy and politics. Here's AM 560's Dan Proft.
Dan Proff back with Cole Lauterbach, reporter for the Illinois News Network, on this edition of Illinois Rising. And Cole, Governor Rauner has established a goal of trying to reduce the Illinois state prison population by 25% by the year 2025, so essentially over the next decade. We've got an overcrowding problem in Illinois state prisons, and over the last 30 years, we've seen inmate population increase by roughly 182% in Illinois, while the population grew only by about 12% over the same period. Much of the increase, it relates to nonviolent drug offenders and thieves, if you will, people who have committed theft,
right,
in our prisons. And so the question is, how do we go about reducing the prison population while also protecting society from predators, even people that become predators because of their other destructive behavior? And it's a real balancing test.
Well, and the thing is, too, is that when you hear about people going to jail, they come out, and today, instead of being rehabilitated, they come out as better criminals. And that is one of the biggest issues of having such a large population in prisons.
Right, the recidivism issue. Well, somebody who's put a lot of study into these issues and rethinking criminal justice is Lauren Crisai. She is the Director of Criminal Justice Reform at the Reason Foundation, and Lauren joins us now. Thanks for joining us, Lauren. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Well, so with the goal that Governor Rauner set forward in Illinois here, what are some suggestions from your research you think the General Assembly and the governor should take under consideration to reduce the prison population while not negatively impacting public safety?
Well, there are a lot of things that Illinois can do. Surprisingly, Illinois is kind of behind even some southern states that have been reforming their criminal justice system, their sentencing laws over the past few years. But, you know, the first place to start, I think, is to look at class four felony offenses. These are the lowest level felony offenses. These are, you know, for drug possession, petty theft, retail theft, things like that. Illinois still has very punitive penalties for these sorts of offenses. So in the brief that we published with Illinois Policy Institute, that's where we say that the commission needs to look out first, because these are the types of people who make up the majority of admissions to prison. They're not staying in prison for very long, but they're just kind of like going in a revolving door. Like, they're coming in, they're going back out, they're coming back in again. And it's just clearly that it's clear that, you know, the way that we're punishing these types of offenders just isn't working.
Lauren, you say, you know, the class four felony offenders, a large amount is retail theft, drug offenses. What can we do to lower the amount of the qualification for a class four felony? Because I know other states have changed this, and it's reduced their population, inmate population, by quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, in Illinois, the threshold for felony theft is still remarkably low. It's only set at $500. So you have to steal, you know, something that's worth $500. And this was set actually in 2013, but originally it was set at $300 back in the 1980s. So when someone was stealing something that was worth $300 in the 1980s, it was worth a lot more than, you know, $300 is today. And it was raised just very, like, arbitrarily, I think, to $500. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. There are a whole lot of things that cost, you know, more than $500 that people take all the time. And I'm not excusing these types of offenses, but I think that, you know, when you steal something that's $500, is that necessarily need to be punished with prison time? I don't think so. So, you know, there are some other states, even neighboring states to Illinois, that have significantly higher felony thresholds, theft thresholds. Like Wisconsin, we talk about in our policy brief, their felony theft threshold is $2,500. They have about the same level of theft that Illinois does. So it shows that it is possible to raise the felony theft level without seeing increases in felony theft. Most people who are going to commit these types of offenses don't really follow the legislature on a day-to-day basis, so they're not going to be looking for, oh, they increased the felony theft threshold, now I can steal way more. That's just not really how it works. So I think that, you know, if we're talking about prioritizing public safety, I think that the punishment that we're doling out in Illinois needs to be more proportionate to the offense. And these people that we're locking up and charging and convicting of felonies, I think, can be handled in a different way.
Now, as it pertains to drug offenses, I recently spoke with the the FOP president in Chicago, Dean Angelo. And the issue is right now, Chicago is trending to have the fewest number of drug arrests since the Nixon administration. I asked him if that was good news or bad news. And he said it was bad news because what it really indicates that's happening in Chicago is essentially the police standing down and the drug trade run by the gangs allowed to progress without interaction from police, without essentially policing. What's your reaction to that? Now, I know that's focused on the drug dealers and the gang side of it, but what's your reaction to that in terms of how you message to the public reducing the offense or treating drug users differently than perhaps they're treated right now under Illinois law will enhance public safety while not and not compromise policing as it pertains to dealing with street gangs?
Yeah, I don't really see arresting fewer people for drug possession as a bad thing. I think, from a libertarian perspective, ideally we wouldn't really be arresting our way out of this drug use problem at all. So I think that when we're talking about people who are just possessing drugs, we're talking about people who are using it for their own personal use. Right now, the way that Illinois treats those people is that we lock them up and charge them with felonies. And other states, even southern states, are moving away from that model. And in Utah, I know that's not southern state, but it's a conservative state. They recently made possession of low amounts of drugs a misdemeanor offense. In Illinois, possession of any amount of certain controlled substances is a felony. In other southern states, they've done similar things. In South Carolina, they made possession of small amounts of drugs a misdemeanor as well. So when you have conservative states like South Carolina and Utah making these types of offenses misdemeanors instead of felonies, and Illinois still has these harsh penalties on the books, you got to start to wonder, like, why is that? I don't really think there's a good public safety reason for those types of penalties.
With respect to that small amounts, decriminalizing them or treating them less severely than Illinois does, is there a distinction to be made between, say, marijuana and heroin?
Well, I think that from a libertarian perspective, I would say no. There's no data to back up, arresting and throwing people in jail for possession of these offenses has a public safety benefit. No data supports that type of claim. So, like, throwing people in jail who have addiction issues, marijuana obviously isn't as harmful as these other drugs, but still, like, I think that traditionally our response has been similar, and I don't think that we should, do different levels of enforcement for different kinds of drugs because it doesn't have any data to back up that will positively improve public safety in any way. It'll just take some drug offenders who have addictions to certain types of substances and charge them differently than people who are addicted to other types of substances. And I don't think that makes any sense logically or from a public safety perspective to treat different offenders differently.
Lauren, what's your reception via public opinion on this matter? Because this is something that you can't really draw down partisan lines in respect to lowering the prison population. Because people still want to be, conservative states, still want to be tough on crime. They don't want to be seen as soft on the criminal element in their state. But then again, at the same time, they don't want to have these massive prison states that are costing tens of thousands of dollars per inmate to house, and then only to have them come out as more, refined criminals, not, in a public citizen that's going to contribute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that this is one of the few bipartisan issues that we're seeing in a number of different states. And at the federal level, although I think that the federal level, they're kind of duking it out right now as far as what specific reforms that they want to enact. But, traditionally we've seen over the past few years a number of conservative states who have had these overcrowded prisons and budget problems, re-examine how they sentence certain types of offenders. And they've realized, like, look, there are some people in prison that don't belong there. We're being tough on crime, sure, but are we being smart on crime? I think is something that they're starting to ask themselves, and they're realizing that when they're looking at the types of offenders that are in prison who are receiving, years in prison, sometimes decades or even life in prison for nonviolent offenses, they're starting to say, look, this isn't necessarily being smart on crime. People, public safety is not enhanced when we're throwing these types of offenders in prison. And so they're starting to scale back some of these types of offenses or sentences for these types of offenses, and they're not seeing an increase in violent crime in their states. So I think it shows that, you know, if conservative southern states with these bloated prison populations are able to scale back their prison populations without impacting public safety, Illinois can certainly do the same.
All right. She is Lauren Crisai, Director of Criminal Justice Reform at the Reason Foundation. Lauren, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
You're listening to Illinois Rising.
We're so excited about our sold-out golf outing at the Bolingbrook Golf Club coming up on Thursday, June 16th, to benefit Operation Support Our Troops America.
If you weren't able to get in this year, don't worry. You can still reserve a tee time at the Bolingbrook Golf Club anytime this spring or summer by visiting bolingbrookgolfclub.com.
And thanks to the sponsors who are making our golf outing possible.
Dependable Construction Company Incorporated, Charity Golf International, Dr. Amy and Associates, MJ Miller and Company Jewelers in Barrington, and Pearl Mortgage.
Fox News Radio, I'm Jane Metzler.
We will leave no stone unturned in our investigation.
Auburn, Massachusetts Police Chief Andrew Sluckis, the community mourning the murder of police officer Ronald Tarantino, fatally shot during a traffic stop last night. President Obama now in Vietnam, first stop on a week-long Asian tour.
It may surprise some Americans to know that the president actually enjoys a fairly high regard here in Vietnam, and he hopes to use some of that political capital during his time here, and he will be talking a great deal about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, obviously the effort to lift an ongoing arms ban. The Americans, at least our government, it is thought, would like to give them a bit more access so that they could counterbalance the growing security threat by China in this region.
Fox's Kevin Cork and the animated Angry Birds movie topping the weekend box office. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Stuck in traffic? We've got the answer from the North State Steel Traffic Center.
I'm George Cotsarillos, taking a look at your traffic. No problems on the Edens. Inbound Lake Cook to Montrose, 19. Outbound back to Lake Cook is 23. Kennedy headed in O'Hare to downtown, 34 from Montrose, 18. Outbound back to Montrose, 14. Out to the airport, 31. Express lane sitting at 15. Eisenhower in Thorndale to the Circle, 37 from Mannheim, 22. Outbound back to Mannheim, 24. Out to Thorndale is 37. Stevenson in, 355 to Lakeshore Drive, 39. Tri-State, take it to 29. Outbound to the Tri-State, 30. Out to 355 is 40. Dan Ryan headed in 95th to downtown, 19. 20 out to 95th. I-57, Bishop Ford, fine. No problems on Lakeshore Drive other than the usual delays. On the tollways, Tri-State northbound, Reg Memorial to the Eisenhower is going to be stop and go. Jane Addams, eastbound Tight River Road Toll Plaza to the Kennedy. AM 560 weather right now. It is 73 degrees and sunny. Our next update is in 15 minutes on AM 560. The Answer.
Jobs are leaving Illinois. Career politicians work overtime to push the state further into debt. Illinois needs fresh ideas. Thankfully, the Illinois Policy Institute is fighting for you in Springfield. The Institute is the state's top taxpayer watchdog. For over a decade, they fought against tax increases and red tape. They work hard for you every day and can use your help to advance personal freedom and restore Illinois to greatness. Visit IllinoisPolicy.org today to join the cause. That's IllinoisPolicy.org.
There is nothing sadder than having to say goodbye to your home. And for too many families all across Illinois, that's exactly what's happened. Unfortunately, years of reckless state spending has led to massive debt, resulting in stagnant wages, high taxes, and fewer jobs. And record numbers have been forced to flee Illinois for opportunities elsewhere. But we can change that. If we all stand together and demand that the politicians end the wasteful spending, balance the budget, and restore fiscal sanity to Illinois, instead of saying goodbye, we can start saying welcome back home to Illinois. Demand common sense spending reforms. Visit IllinoisAction.org to sign the petition.
If you currently use a CPAP system, I've got an important question for you. Are you sure you're keeping your CPAP system clean enough? Like, really sure? A dirty CPAP system is a perfect breeding ground for germs. Put that mask on, and they've got a direct line to your body. Talk about a good way to get sick. Fortunately, SoClean.com has released the world's first and only automated CPAP cleaner and sanitizer. It kills 99.9% of all CPAP germs in minutes. To introduce it to the world, they want you to try it risk-free for 30 days. Just call 1-800-693-5226. With SoClean, you never have to clean your machine by hand again. There's no water, chemicals, or disassembly. Just pop in your mask, close the lid, and presto! Your CPAP system is clean and fresh in minutes. Call SoClean.com to try it risk-free at home for 30 days. Supplies are limited, so don't wait. Call 1-800-693-5226. 1-800-693-5226.
Mike Rowe here for 1 hour. Today, Chuck is jogging in place to make a point about energy efficiency.
I thought I was training for a marathon.
He's been at it now for...
3 minutes.
And already, he's wearing out.
I'm not.
Your heating and air conditioning systems are a lot like Chuck.
Warm, yet somehow cool.
Wheezing, wasting energy, and probably headed for replacement.
You're talking about the air systems, right?
Sure, pal. Sure. Call 1 hour before it's too late.
Can you do the disclaimer for me?
Each independent franchise is licensed in its respective state or county.
Thanks.
Now, more of Illinois Rising, presented by the Illinois Policy Institute, the only show directly addressing the problems and solutions for Illinois. Now, from AM 560, here's Dan Proft.
Dan Proft back with Cole Lauterbach, reporter for the Illinois News Network, on this edition of Illinois Rising. And, Cole, we were just talking about issues with respect to thresholds for individuals to be charged with felonies. Maybe the thresholds need to be raised for petty theft or for nonviolent drug offenses. Another part of the whole discussion of criminal justice reform is the issue of reentry, the ex-offender programs that are often talked about. How do you reacclimate people who have gone away for some time to prison into civil society such that they're not a danger to others, but also they have a productive path forward and balancing, you know, it's another, kind of another balancing proposition. And to help us on that topic, we're now happy to be joined by Gerard Robinson, who's a resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. He recently wrote a piece on this very issue of reentry reform, as it's termed. And Gerard, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So some things that should be considered at the state level, states knowing that most of their inmates are going to be released back into the general population. And what are things that can be done that are not being done to reduce the incidence of recidivism and kind of direct people, incentivize people to more productive behavior than the behavior that landed them in prison in the first place?
So, unfortunately, too many of them arrive in prison without the academic or job skill set needed to be a productive wage-earning citizen for a host of reasons. And many of them will not receive that in prison. And so upon leaving, they're still faced with some of the challenges. So there are two things I would do. Number one is to really focus on entrepreneurship. We know that there are at least 23 states in Washington, D.C., who are part of an effort to ban the box for ex-felons, and so that when he or she is applying for a job, the issue of their criminal record will come into play later in the interview process than at the beginning, which would often just disqualify them up front. So we've got to focus on entrepreneurship because they frankly need to have the skill set often to create their own jobs. I think of a program called the Prison Entrepreneurship Program in Texas. They do the exact thing of providing entrepreneurship. So that's part one. Part two is making sure that inmates can read above the eighth grade level in order for them to participate in the type of jobs that will be needed. So these are what I call back-end reforms that we can do, and some places are doing it better than others. But I'm glad to see both Democrats and Republicans talking about this in a way that makes sense for the nation.
Now, Gerard, you bring up the fact that, you know, these people need to be a little bit more self-sufficient when they get out because of the issues with the box, you know, the felon box and all that. One issue that's been addressed here in Illinois is the fact that we need certifications to braid hair, and we need to allow the government to tell us what we can and cannot do. We need their permission. What has been your experience with the need to lift some of that red tape to allow these people that are going through these certification programs, these training programs while in incarceration to lead productive lives without the government standing in their way.
So I'm calling you from Washington, D.C. right now, a city where at one point there was a pretty onerous regulation on the number of hours that you needed to actually receive a license certification to be a hair braider. And in many times, the number of hours you needed were more than you needed to actually sell real estate. And so there are things that we can do to, A, lift the regulatory burden, but I guess that's number one. But number two is to bring common sense to play. A number of people who are self-sufficient as entrepreneurs who've left federal and state prison, frankly, have created their own businesses. And the worst thing we can do is overregulate them and put them in a position where they're left with few options. Make no excuse. I don't think we should overlook behavior that's antisocial, but I do think there's a regulatory role that the government plays, and I think we should be smarter about how we address it.
Well, what's the main hurdle to getting more of these entrepreneurship programs going, reading programs, as you suggested? Is it just the idea that it's a tough sell to, say, spend the scarce tax dollars we have on convicted criminals?
So when I published a piece on children of the incarcerated and a couple of others, some of the comments that I received, first of all, they did the crime, they should do the time. If they didn't want to learn when they were in school, it's not our fault. And so there's a segment of our population mm-hmm. who believes, we've done our part. But we've got to get universities involved. And so the PEP program, or the PUP, the PEP program in Texas, they're actually aligned with Baylor University. So the inmates receive a certificate in entrepreneurship. You're in Illinois, and so whether it's the University of Illinois, Urbana, or Chicago, or whether it's the University of Chicago or other schools, social entrepreneurs should just make a link and say, listen, your degree has cachet. We have a set of people, if they meet certain criteria, they should be able to participate in your program. So some of this is going to, frankly, mean nonprofit and for-profit companies going to universities and brokering the kind of deal to make this work.
All right. He is Gerard Robinson, resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. A good piece on criminal justice reform, some of the highlights you've just heard from Gerard. Gerard, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
You're listening to Illinois Rising on AM 560. The Answer. How can you get from here to there? We've got the answer from the North State Steel Traffic Center.
That's Arillo's taking a look at your traffic. No problems to report on the Edens inbound, outbound, back to Lake Cook, take it to 21. If you're traveling on the Kennedy inbound, O'Hare to downtown, sitting at 33 from Montrose 20. Outbound's 18 to Montrose, 35 out to the airport. Express lane sitting at 9. On the Eisenhower, headed in Thorndale to the Circle, 41 from Manheim, 25. Outbound's a bit worse, 27 to Manheim, 40 to Thorndale. Stevenson in 355 to Lakeshore Drive, 41 from the Tri-State, half an hour. Outbound's 31 to the Tri-State, 41 to 355. Dan Ryan headed in 95th to downtown, 22. Outbound back to 95th, 18. No delays in I-57 or Bishop Ford. Usual delays happening on Lakeshore Drive. Out of the tollways, Tri-State northbound going to be tight between Halstead and I-80. On the Jane Addams eastbound between the Tri-State and the Kennedy. AM 560 weather. Right now it is 72 degrees and sunny. Our next update's in 15 minutes on AM 560, The Answer.
Jobs are leaving Illinois. Career politicians work overtime to push the state further into debt. Illinois needs fresh ideas. Thankfully, the Illinois Policy Institute is fighting for you in Springfield. The Institute is the state's top taxpayer watchdog. For over a decade, they fought against tax increases and red tape. They work hard for you every day and can use your help to advance personal freedom and restore Illinois to greatness. Visit IllinoisPolicy.org today to join the cause. That's IllinoisPolicy.org.
Hi, I'm Dr. Howard. In my travels, I occasionally hear a Balance of Nature ad on the radio. These products are the culmination of my life's work, and I'm often surprised at my emotions that arise when people talk about how they have improved the quality of their life.
One thing that I'm amazed about is that prior to taking this, I was having hot flashes like almost mm-hmm. every day, sometimes mm-hmm. periodically, and haven't had them since then. So by all means, that's the one thing that I'm very grateful for.
These people are real. I'd like to thank the Balance of Nature customers for trusting me and for allowing me to help them in their pursuit of health.
Call now. Accept and complete Dr. Howard's 120-day challenge to earn a free month supply of Balance of Nature. Call 1-800-246-8751. That's 1-800-246-8751. Or go online to balanceofnature.com. Use promo code Chicago.
You know them. You love them. It's Al and Marty.
Highland Park Ford Lincoln has been here for nearly 30 years, and we get lots of great letters.
Read some of the fan mail, Al.
Dear Al and Marty, you are the most spectacular car dealers ever. You're American heroes. No, superheroes. Especially Al.
Wait a sec.
It goes on and on about my greatness.
Give me that.
Hey, stop.
It's signed. Al totally didn't write this.
See? Completely unbiased.
Highland Park Ford Lincoln Superstore. Call 800-984-9000 or visit alandmarty.com.
This is Al and Marty. Deal with us.
Now, more stories, insights, and analysis of Illinois policy and politics. This is Illinois Rising, presented by the Illinois Policy Institute. Once again, your host, AM 560's Dan Proft.
Dan Proft back with Cole Lauterbach, a reporter for the Illinois News Network on this edition of Illinois Rising. Cole, a couple of things with respect to the governor's rather contentious relationship with public sector unions this week, although not all public sector unions. It's quite interesting. You had a 8,000-person rally, public sector workers, on Wednesday at the Capitol. But a underreported story, of course, was that the governor successfully negotiated yet another collective bargaining agreement with a public sector union representing a small group of public sector workers. 17 collective bargaining agreements the administration has, the Ronner administration, has successfully negotiated with Teamsters, and this, the most recent one, with the Illinois Federation of Teachers, where you've got the public sector unions agreeing to take wage freezes and make other concessions because of the financial state of the state. And yet AFSCME, the state's largest public sector union representing some 37,000 state workers, the real impetus behind that rally I mentioned on Wednesday, refuses to relent. They want a contract that would cost Illinois taxpayers another $3 billion in a state that's got $10 billion in unpaid bills and, you know, and $212 billion in debt. I mean, it's just not feasible. And so the governor, at some point, I think, is going to have to dispense with his conciliatory rhetoric towards the public sector unions that are intransigent and tell them if here's the last kind of last best final offer. If you don't like it, then you got a problem because we're going to look for people to replace you.
Right. Well, and I mean, like you said, AFSCME at this point is they're not looking at contract demands with in respect to the current reality fiscally of the state of Illinois. When you're talking about continued, you know, increases over 4 years, just automatic step increases. And then also at the same time, Governor Rauner is coming back and saying, look, you can have increases, but I want them to be based off of performance, merit. And, you know, I'm not saying you need to take a off the board wage freeze, but you also have to think about the scope of this. You're talking billions of dollars for 0.5% of the entire workforce in Illinois, that 37,000 workers.
Oh. Right. I mean, it's that you get a sense that there's more than there actually is just because of the coverage. And you see 8,000 people in Springfield. But at the end of the day, it represents a small fraction of the overall Illinois workforce, while the big fraction pays for largesse they don't see. Governor Rauner was in Carterville in southern Illinois on Wednesday while this rally was going on. He responded.
I could see that the Democrats were going to pass another out-of-balance budget. So every year they've been passing a budget that's either $4 or $5 billion deficit, with no money to pay for it. So that's not even, it's not really even a budget, and frankly, it's unconstitutional. Our constitution of the state says a balanced budget is required. Well, the Democrats and General Assembly just ignore it, and they pass spending bills with no way to pay for it.
And this is the kind of why he has embarked on the structural reforms, at least in proposal form, that he has embarked upon and is holding fast to saying, I got to have some structural reforms. We have to change the costs imposed by state government. We have to bend the cost curve effectively. And he's not impressed by AFSCME sloganeering.
Not in Springfield. You know, I think there's several thousand protesters there right now. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people. You know what? If yelling and chanting and protesting solved problems, Illinois wouldn't have any problems. I mean, we have a lot of that.
Yeah.
I think that Yeah, well, I mean, he's right. If Illinois was run off of chanting and, you know, screaming at people, then we would get a lot done.
If ifs and buts were candy nuts, everybody would have a Merry Christmas, and that's just not the way it is. But in terms of chanting and rallying the crowd, House Speaker Mike Madigan put down his sliced apples and came out to the rally to, offer his little back and forth ping-ponging with his public sector union financiers. Listen to House Speaker Mike Madigan, to Rauner's point.
Tell me how you feel. Governor Rauner wants to change workers' compensation. How do you feel? Governor Rauner wants to change collective bargaining. How do you feel? Governor Rauner wants to change the prevailing wage. How do you feel?
Sounds like a pattern.
Governor Rauner wants to use the government to lower wages. How do you feel?
Sounds like
Frampton. Governor Rauner wants to use the government to lower the standard of living. How do you feel?
Oh.
Governor Rauner in workers' compensation wants to send injured workers to the emergency room. How do you feel?
Where should injured
Governor
people
Rauner
go?
Wants to send injured workers to the welfare. How do you feel?
The welfare.
Here's the last question. Governor Rauner wants Illinois to go right to work. How do you feel?
No. By the way, no is not a feeling. And then Madigan ended that with his white power salute, then walked off the stage, dropped the mic. And you just wonder, Governor Rauner would like you to think for yourself. Do you want to do that? No. No, this is part of the problem. But it shows you that all of the talk from Madigan, Chicago Democrat bosses, legislative leaders in Springfield, about any willingness to compromise and find common ground and all the meaningless phrases they like to bandy about, he goes back to his base camp there, and that's what he's saying. I mean, that's the real Madigan. That's the real play. It's just a power play. And, of course, all those structural reforms he ticked out, no, we don't want to do any of those things because we want to protect the status quo that served me very well over the last three decades, while Illinois has become the worst governed state in the nation with the worst financial condition and unemployment 20% higher than the national average. So why would we change anything? Things are going so well.
Right. And he is just looking at this point in Mike Madigan's career, as his long, illustrious career as Speaker of the House. What does he have to gain personally from going along with any of these reforms that, like you said, would change the status quo and would endanger his political power base?
You're listening to Illinois Rising on AM 560. The Answer.
There is nothing sadder than having to say goodbye to your home. And for too many families all across Illinois, that's exactly what's happened. Unfortunately, years of reckless state spending has led to massive debt, resulting in stagnant wages, high taxes, and fewer jobs. And record numbers have been forced to flee Illinois for opportunities elsewhere. But we can change that if we all stand together and demand that the politicians end the wasteful spending, balance the budget, and restore fiscal sanity to Illinois. Instead of saying goodbye, we can start saying welcome back home to Illinois. Demand common sense spending reforms. Visit IllinoisAction.org to sign the petition.
The following is an incredible, life-changing free offer for anyone with hearing problems who wants to start hearing everything more clearly again. We're now offering free in-home trials of a revolutionary hearing breakthrough called Listen Clear to anyone who calls this special toll-free number now, 1-800-300-3391. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also qualify for free shipping and free batteries for life. Listen Clear is precisely designed by top audio engineers. It adjusts to let you find the perfect way to hear everything, wherever you are and whatever you're doing. And Listen Clear is so invisible, people may not even know you're wearing it. And it's so lightweight, you may even forget you're wearing it too. Don't miss this special life-changing opportunity to hear everything more clearly again for free with a 100% free in-home trial, free shipping, and even free batteries for life. For free information, call now. 1-800-300-3391. That's 1-800-300-3391. 1-800-300-3391.
Restoring Illinois to
greatness. This is Illinois Rising, presented by the Illinois Policy Institute and hosted by AM 560's Dan Proft.
Dan Proft back with Cole Lauterbach, reporter for the Illinois News Network on this edition of Illinois Rising. And Cole, interesting story came out last week. A couple of Democrat state legislators got in a bit of hot water because they were iSpied on the House floor playing games on their iPads. Candy Crush, I think, was the game of choice.
Yeah.
And this is a state representative, Kate Clune, a Democrat from Kankakee, and state representative Mike Smitty, a Democrat from the Quad Cities. And this was during debate about spending hundreds of millions of dollars on higher education, you know, funding higher ed, which has been one of the sticking points between the governor and the General Assembly. The sticking point being the governor wants an actual revenue source before he's going to pass bills saying something's going to, or sign bills saying something that's going to be funded. And I wonder what you think the fallout is for those two legislators in particular, as it speaks to kind of the ruling class mentality that I think a lot of people are rejecting as it manifests itself in Springfield as well as Washington.
I think you're exactly right. It speaks to more of the fact that these guys are just there to place their button pressers at this point. I mean, it definitely, you know, fights against that, their claim that they are independent. And I mean, if your job is already pretty much decided by the time the debate for hundreds of millions of dollars in loan forgiveness, then in turn, doling out to higher education, then why are you there?
Now, Kate Clunan, she apologized profusely. I mean, she's someone who has won her last two elections by a combined about 200 votes. So she's targeted for elimination by the Republicans. And obviously she understands how bad this looks. She apologizes and saying, well, it won't happen again, kind of nonsense. Mike Smitty, on the other hand, basically said, well, you know, it was over. I knew how I was going to vote.
Yeah, he gave me a pretty, I would definitely say there was no mea culpa in there when I spoke with the representative. He said that, well, look, the vote was already decided on, and I had already knew how I was going to vote. We talked about this in committee, and apparently the people of Illinois don't think that your state representatives are capable of multitasking. And I thought,
so
I
can play Candy Crush while I listen to debate, because the interesting part of that response, the phrase "the vote" was decided, not my vote, not I had decided how I was going to vote. The vote was decided. I had been told what to do effectively. And so I was just waiting for everybody to stop yapping so I could just do Mike Madigan's bidding.
Right, exactly. And think about, put this in a perspective of the real world. If you're in one of the, you know, your company's massive full board meetings with everyone around you, there's a hot debate over a big issue that's going to have huge ramifications. And you're sitting there playing a video game on your phone. And you can tell me that, well, I'm just multitasking. I mean, really, my job was done at that point.
It's kind of an important event because it illustrates something that I don't think a lot of people understand. And this is why you have the disconnect between what people think in terms of what policy should be pursued and what kind of representation they want, and then what they actually do in so many offices. The disconnect between Mike Madigan, who I don't like, you know, I live in the Quad Cities, I live in Kankakee, Smitty and Clunan's districts, respectively. I don't like Mike Madigan, those Chicago Democrats who've destroyed our state. But Mike Smitty's not part of the problem. Kate Clune is not part of the problem because I know them, because I see them around our community. They're very nice. Our kids go to school together, what have you. And now what you see, and even Smitty's defiance, as you've described it, is they are connected. Mike Smitty and Kate Clunan are saying one thing to you and presenting one visage locally, but they go to Springfield and play Candy Crush and just wait to be told what to do. And maybe finally, with an event like this, an incident like this, it brings it home for some of these voters to say on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November to Mike Smitty and Kate Clunan, game over.
You're listening to Illinois Rising on AM 560. The Answer.
Certapro.